Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
If one thinks about family businesses in Ireland and one thinks about retail, there's one family that has shown us the very best and worst of how family businesses can survive and thrive at one level, but at a huge cost to individual family members working in that business. It's great to say good morning to Matt Cooper, whose book Dynasty, that I've just read, chronicles the life and times of the family behind Dunn Stores. Matt, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me on, Bobby.
Now, Matt, firstly, I want to ask you about how difficult is it to write a composite history of a very colourful and interesting family without the cooperation of any of the surviving family members?
Well, when you say difficult, I found it very, very enjoyable to actually write this book. This is the seventh book that I've written, but I would argue it's probably been the most enjoyable, that and the Tony O'Reilly book that I did a decade ago called The Maximalist, because it was just such a brilliant story to get into. I would have had a lot of access to Ben at a very crucial period when he was alive, which is central to a lot of the things in the book. And he told me lots and lots of things, some of which I was able to put in print at the time, some of which not, and have been able to do so now. I think there was always a realization that a surviving family member, Margaret Heffernan, just doesn't do interviews. I did write to her and I asked her and I phoned her on a number of occasions. As I managed, I got her phone number and she never responded to any of the phone messages. And that is her right. And, you know, that, you know, she's a private individual. Although, as I do outline in the book, there have been occasions in the past when she has found it to her benefit to speak publicly about things. But for the most part, she doesn't like speaking about these things. And, you know, I was sort of respectful to that. But this is a major company in Irish life. About one in four of every euro spent in supermarkets every week is spent in Dunn Stores. This is a company which has clothed so many people over the years. It's also gone into homeware. It's a major presence in Irish retail. It's a major company. So I felt it was a significant company that was worth writing about and a family worth writing about. And the things which you have to do sometimes in journalism and in writing books is you plow on even if people are not necessarily going to cooperate with you. And just one other point on that is that, you know, sometimes cooperation can be a curse.
Yeah.
In that cooperation is that you get spun a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, my job is to try to get to the real story, and I think I've managed to do that.
And am I right in saying that originally your plan was to write a book about Ben Jr.?
No, I was asked to write a book about Ben Jr. And when I looked at it, when I considered it, I thought, well, actually, that's only part of the story. Now, if I had written a book that was solely about Ben, or Bernard, as the family actually call him, it would have had probably most of the material that was in this book. But I actually thought that the family itself was far more interesting. And I managed to get quite a lot of material about the founder, Ben Sr. And that was one of the more interesting and enjoyable parts for me. And also to get details about Ben's late sisters and also his relationship with Frank. Frank became a central figure in the book as well. I managed to find out a lot more about Frank than I'd anticipated.
Let's talk about Ben Sr. for a second, as the start of the book outlines. He was a visionary, a man who, and we know the adage, buy cheap, sell cheap, pile them high, throw in 90 days credit and you've got a pretty good business model. But he tried to control the business almost from beyond the grave.
Well, yeah, one of the central stories, I mean, this book is full of, I would argue, just great stories like that you sort of really get gripped into. And obviously, Ben Jr. and the kidnapping and Orlando and all the rest of it. But Ben Sr., one of the key things which brought Dunn Stores right into the heart of the tribunals back in the 1990s, it wasn't just that Ben Jr. had been giving money to Charlie High. It was that Ben Sr. had set up a trust to try and control the family and the future of the business from beyond the grave. And that trust led to all sorts of legal and tax issues, which led Ben Jr. into the environs of Charlie Haughey and the Revenue Commissioner.
So there was a route to that.
There was. I mean,
and
I think
that was created by Senior.
But also, I mean, I think he just imbued in the family this whole sense that this business has to be owned 100% by the family and remain in control. And that's why it still is 100%, despite owned by the family. Despite the fact that there have been over the generations some very, very important managers, such as the likes of Noel Fox, who have been absolutely central to the running of the business, they were never given shares in it. They were rewarded well financially at the top levels, but never, ever any ownership. And also with Margaret Heffernan...
Equity is blood.
Yeah, exactly. And Margaret Heffernan has been very, very, very much of the thing that, you know, she wants to maintain family ownership, family control, the family name over the stores all around. And it is remarkable. I mean, I went a little bit into the book as well, into the history of all of the other retailers that have gone. Like, I grew up in Cork, and the Roche stores, Patrick Street, would be like, was a
where
major
where Ben Senior originally worked.
Where he worked. And that is gone now. You know, the Roche stores went, the family sold on. And if you go through all the various other Findlaters, the various other retailers who would have been there in Dublin and around the country, all gone. And they have managed to keep it as the family business. And that also is something I go into a little bit, which is how Margaret has identified her daughter, Anne, who is in her late 50s now, and her niece, Sharon McMahon, also in her late 50s, as the next generation. They want to keep this as a family business.
You talk about them being press shy. A couple of cases that we'd almost forgotten about. The six staff shoplifting case back in the 60s.
But sir, when you say people have forgotten about that, I was amazed when I discovered that. Because I have been writing about Dunn stores since the 1990s and, you know, was aware of all of the stories. And I had never, ever heard of that particular case where six women working in one of the stores very close to where we are here now, Marconi House, around in Georgia Street, that they were accused wrongly of stealing. And there was a civil case as well as a criminal case. And the shenanigans that went on in relation to those cases was quite extraordinary. And a very serious civil finding against Ben Senior and Margaret, which was overturned at the Supreme Court under the ruling of Carol O'Dolig, who later became president. And this was amazing to me to discover that this had gone on in the 1960s.
And then there was the famous Mary Manning, 1984, refusing to handle South African goods. That went on for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, like, that is a major blight, I suppose, on Dunn stores. Ben apologised eventually back, about 2009 or so, to Mary Manning, went on Liveline to do so. Dunn stores, the company, hasn't apologised in relation to that. I don't think it would be absolutely wrong to say that Dunn stores endorsed the apartheid regime. That wasn't what the strike was about as far as they were concerned. It was all about they were not going to be told by their employees as to what to do, as to what goods could be handled, what could be sold. It was just simply an issue of control rather than having any political support for the apartheid regime.
You mentioned Margaret's legacy there, Matt. 80 years in the family business, no dilution, reportedly no borrowings. But Ben Senior never really recognised Margaret's talent.
I suspect he did recognise Margaret's talent and knew just how good she was, but he fell into the traditional trap of the time, is that the boys inherit. And Frank would have been the guy who would have taken over. And Frank had a lot of power in the 1970s. But Frank had his own difficulties. There was a family difficulty with alcohol. And Frank definitely struggled with alcohol. And he struggled with other mental health issues throughout his life. And even though he was talented...
He was good on property and stuff like that.
Particularly good on property and what they needed in that. He stood aside. Ben Jr., he came to the fore despite the fact of not having had a traditional education. It was like Ben's joke was that he never failed an exam because he never sat one. And I think actually it became quite clear that Ben was dyslexic and had various other issues that he had to deal with. But he was a very, very good retailer. He learnt it. He wasn't brilliant when he went to try and do other things afterwards.
Yeah.
He was very much a product of Dunn stores. But the reality is, I mean, the women were very talented as well, but weren't given the first shot at it by the parents. But the reality is Margaret understood the business inside out. And when she took control of it in the 90s, and yes, with a degree of support from Frank, who she relied upon as well, when he came back into the business, very much trying to stay out of the public eye. But Margaret always had the talent, but I suppose she just felt she had the drive from middle age onwards to protect the family legacy.
I knew Ben reasonably well. Every time he had a problem with a coffee shop or whatever in any of the gyms, he used to ring me up and haul me out there, and I'd give him advice and he wouldn't listen to it. But I really enjoyed him. And my favourite story about him is when he went to the Sinn Féin fundraising lunch, and they were raising money, and he said he was here looking for a refund.
Yes. Apparently, I got a new detail on what happened in relation to the kidnap. Particularly, I spoke to the former trade union organiser, Phil Flynn, who would have been involved in a sort of suggesting backdoor routes to making the payments. The Gardaí and the government were determined that a ransom would not be paid. So there had to be alternative methods set up to sort of slip the attention of the Gardaí. And a payment was made. It's not quite clear how much, but it almost certainly was no less than £500,000 at the time. It was an enormous sum of money.
And finally, Matt, you were actually in the room when a call came in from one Charles High to Ben Dunn. So that like
serendipity. That. Yeah, I mean, it was the back in early 1993 when it became clear that Ben was been thrown out of Dunn Stores. There was a story on the front page of the Business Post, a very short story saying he had been removed. And I was business editor of the Irish Independent. I'd only joined the Irish Independent as business editor a couple of months earlier. And I was at a wedding in Cork on the Saturday night, and Vinnie Doyle rang me in the days before mobile phones. The editor, Vinnie Doyle, "Where are you?" And I'm a bit, had a few drinks, and I sort of bravely said, "Well, you know where I am. You're after tracking me down to the hotel where I'm at a wedding." And he says, "Get back up to Dublin. I want you to cover this story tomorrow. I want everything." So on the Sunday, I went out to Ben's house out in Castleknock.
Mildly hungover.
And I remember very well the thing. It was just one of these things that really sticks with you. And I went in, Ben, there was another journalist there who went first. I was chatting to one of Ben's sons inside in the kitchen. And then I went into his study. And we're in there and we're having the conversation, and he is absolutely incandescent with rage about Frank. He, at this stage, himself and Frank were really, really, there was a real bitter enmity there. But as the conversation is going on, the phone rings on his desk, and he said, "I better take this." It was his private line into the desk. And he basically, "Hello, boss." And the minute I heard him saying "boss," that was the nickname that people had for Hoggy at the time. And I was listening sort of intently, and he goes, "No, I'm fine. I'm good. It's all right. Listen, I can't really talk now. I've got Matt Cooper from The Independent here." And I said, "All right." And he puts it on. And then he says to me, "Charlie Hoggy, just checking in the boss, how I am." He was checking in how he was.
All right. Look, it's a fascinating read. It's a great book. I enjoyed every bit of it.
It's also available in audio book, actually. I'm amazed at the amount of people who are now going, instead of reading the books, much of the who are seem to enjoy audio books. So, I mean, there's a paperback version coming out later in the year. There aren't that many of the hardback books left in the shops.
Now I know why you were the business editor in The Independent all those years. He knows how to sell this business. Matt Cooper, Dynasty is the book. It's the scandals, triumph, turmoil and succession at the heart of Dunn Stores. Great conversation, Matt. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much for having me in, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.